Hey, Kitty. We're starting chapter 23 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The Yule Ball. Despite the very heavy load of homework that the fourth years had been given for the holidays, Harry was in no mood to work when the term ended, and spent the week leading up to Christmas enjoying himself as fully as possible, along with everyone else. Gryffindor Tower was hardly less crowded now than during term time. It seemed to have shrunk slightly, too, as its inhabitants were being so much rowdier than usual. Fred and George had a great success with their canary creams, and for the first couple of days of the holiday, people kept bursting into feathers all over the place. But before long, however, all the Gryffindors had learned to treat food anybody offered them with extreme caution in case it had a canary cream concealed in the center, and George confided to Harry that he and Fred were now working on developing something else. Harry made a mental note never to accept so much as a crisp from Fred and George in the future. He still hadn't forgotten Dudley and the tongue-tongue coffee. Snow was falling thickly upon the castle and its grounds now. The pale blue Beaubaton carriage looked like a large chilly frosted pumpkin next to the iced gingerbread house that was Hagrid's cabin, while the Durmstrang ship's portholes were glazed with ice and the rigging white with frost. The house elves down in the kitchen were outdoing themselves with a series of rich warming stews and savory puddings, and only Fleur de Lacour seemed to be able to find anything to complain about. "It is too heavy, all this Hogwarts food," they heard her saying grumpily as they left the great hall behind her one evening, Ron skulking behind Harry, keen not to be spotted by Fleur. "I will not fit into my dress robes." "Ooh, there's a tragedy," Hermione snapped as Fleur went out in the entrance hall. "She really thinks a lot of herself, that one, doesn't she?" "Hermione, who are you going to the ball with?" said Ron. He kept springing this question on her, hoping to startle her into a response by asking it when she least expected. However, Hermione merely frowned and said, "I'm not telling you, you'll just make fun of me." "You're joking, Weasley," said Malfoy behind them. "You're not telling me that someone's asked that to the ball, not the long-molared mudblood." Harry and Ron whipped around, but Hermione said loudly, waving to someone over Malfoy's shoulders, "Hello, Professor Moody." Malfoy went pale and jumped backward, looking wildly around for Moody, but he was still up at the staff table finishing his stew. "Twitchy little ferret, aren't you, Malfoy?" said Hermione scathingly, and she, Harry, and Ron went up the marble staircase, laughing heartily. "Hermione," said Ron, looking sideways, suddenly frowning, "your teeth." "What about them?" she said. "Well, they're different, I just noticed." "Of course they are. Did you expect me to keep those fangs Malfoy gave me?" "No, I mean they're different to how they were before he put that hex on you. They're all straight and normal-sized." Hermione suddenly smiled very mischievously, and Harry noticed it too. It was a different smile from the one he remembered. "Well, when I went up to Madame Pomfrey to get them shrunk, she held up a mirror and told me when to stop, when they were back to how they normally were. And I just let her carry on a bit," she said. She smiled even more widely. "Mum and Dad won't be too pleased. I've been trying to persuade them to let me shrink them for ages. They wanted me to carry on with my braces. You know, they're dentists. They don't just think teeth and magic should... Look, Pidwidgeon's back!" Ron's tiny owl was twittering madly on the top of the icicle-laden banisters, a scroll of parchment tied to his leg. People passing him were pointing and laughing, and a group of 30-year girls paused and said, "Ooh, look at the weeny owl. Isn't he cute?" "Stupid little feathery git," Ron hissed, hurrying up the stairs and snatching Pidwidgeon. "You bring letters to the addressee. You don't hang around showing off." Pidwidgeon hooted happily, his head protruding over Ron's fist. The third-year girls all looked very shocked. "Clear off," Ron snapped at them, waving the fist holding Pidwidgeon, who hooted more happily than ever as he soared through the air. "Here, take it, Harry," Ron added in an undertone as the third-year girls scuttled away, looking scandalized. He pulled Sirius's reply off Pidwidgeon's leg. Harry pocketed it, and they hurried back to Gryffindor Tower to read it. Everyone in the common room was much too busy letting off more holiday steam to observe what anyone was up to. Ron, Harry, and Hermione sat apart from everyone else by a dark window that was gradually filling with snow, and Harry read out, "Dear Harry, congratulations on getting past the Horntail. Whoever put your name in the goblet shouldn't be feeling too happy right now. I was going to suggest a conjunctivitis curse, as the dragon's eyes are its weakest point." "That's what Crumb did," Hermione whispered. "But your way was better, I'm impressed." "Don't get complacent, though, Harry. You've only done one task. Whoever put you in that tournament got plenty more opportunity if they're trying to hurt you. Keep your eyes open, particularly when the person we discussed is around, and concentrate on keeping yourself out of trouble. Keep in touch. I still want to hear about anything unusual."
"He sounds exactly like Moody," Harry said quietly, tucking the letter away inside his robes.
"Constant vigilance.
You'd think I was walking around with my eyes shut, banging off walls."
"But he's right, Harry," said Hermione. "You have still got two tasks left. You really ought to start looking at that egg, you know, and start working out what it means."
Man, Hermione should totally have been in the tournament, not Harry.
"Hermione, he's got ages," snapped Ron. "Want a game of chess, Harry?"
"Yeah, okay," said Harry. Then, spotting a look on Hermione's face, he said,
"Come on, how am I supposed to concentrate with all this noise going wrong? I won't even be able to hear the egg over this lot."
"Oh, I suppose not," she sighed, and sat down to watch their chess match, which culminated in an exciting checkmate of Ron's, involving a couple of recklessly brave pawns and a very violent bishop.
And I think we'll stop there, because it's so late. And I need to go to sleep, too. I love you so much, Kitty. You're a very, very sweet girl. I miss you so much, and I'll see you in a few days. You're still so cute. You're so wonderful and so loving. Sleep well, kitten. Good night.